I'm Nadia Taylor, Training and Exercise Manager for the Readiness Support Center. And this is Semper Gumby, a podcast about emergency management in the Corps of Engineers. We'll cover topics about disaster response and recovery, FEMA mission assignments, and Corps-specific response authorities under which we operate for things like flood fighting and coastal emergencies. Today we're going to be talking about the Safety and Occupational Health Planning and Response Team. And we have two of our subject matter experts here with us. We have Marjorie McDonald and Dennis Bradley. So Marjorie, what do you do for the Corps?
I'm the Chief of Safety and Occupational Health at Great Lakes and Ohio River Division.
And Dennis, how about you? What do you do for the Corps?
I am the Chief of Safety and Occupational Health for the Little Rock District.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for being here. I thought maybe we'd just start with kind of an overview of this PRT, or Planning and Response Team. So tell me a little bit about the Safety and Occupational Health PRT. What is your mission?
The mission is to provide safety oversight for contractors and Corps employees when we get deployed to a disaster area. You know, all of the sections of the EM-385 apply, but specifically Appendix B. So we make sure that's applied evenly across all aspects of all the different trades that we have out there. You know, plumbers, electricians, people doing blue roof missions, and all those types of things. So we just apply the safety regulations across the board.
Okay. And to be clear, EM-385 is the safety manual?
That is correct.
All right. So explain to me, because I know some of our other mission sets like debris, temporary housing, those are FEMA mission assignments, and we have whole planning and response teams that go out. But how does the safety PRT get activated? Is it anytime we have one of those higher risk and more dangerous missions like debris that safety also goes, or what's the process?
The safety PRT is really just like our everyday jobs. When we stand up project offices, or when we stand up an office, or when we have an office, we usually have a safety person connected to that office. So with the debris teams, the same thing applies. With a lot of our infrastructure assessment teams, we're working with the power teams right now to do the same exact thing, get a safety person out there as soon as we can with those teams to go through their initial risk assessments to ensure that our everyday job is to coach and mentor and train those folks to do their job safely. And it's the same thing when we deploy with them. So we like to try to get out there as soon as we can when those teams deploy. We are supporting them in their mission.
Okay, so people deploy on the safety team in like onesie twosies rather than like a whole fleet of folks going out?
That is correct. So normally, if it's a big enough event that we have an RFO set up, we will have a manager at the RFO and onesie twosies that are out in the field supporting the organization. And when our other teams go out ahead of time, we like to try to send our onesie twosies out with them. We don't deploy as a whole cadre of folks. One, most of our offices aren't deep enough to send our entire teams from each division at a time. And two, there's really no need for that. In our real jobs every single day, we support teams of 50, 100 people all the time.
All right. Well, tell me a little bit about how you look for safety regulations and that sort of thing. Let's use debris since we've been talking about that as an example. So say there's been a disaster and we have a debris mission. Tell me a little bit about what a safety PRT member is actually doing in the field with that debris team.
That's a great question. And, you know, the ES 16008 is the guidelines for the safety structure as far as how we go in and assess different elements. So the debris mission in itself is a mission all of itself. And there's a section, there's an appendix that deals directly with that. So a lot of work has been done behind the scenes to go ahead and pull lessons learned, pull activity hazard analysis, and any inherent hazards that have already been recognized for the debris team specifically. So the safety professional that's going to be assigned to that would go in there and review all that material prior to going out, so we can bring all of that material with us, either knowledge base or an actual paper base, you know, so we can spread that information and give safety briefs in the morning to let them know, hey, this is what you might encounter when you get out there and start doing your work.
And now, if you do see something unsafe in the field, is the function of the safety PRT member such that they can shut down the entire mission until that thing is addressed? How does that work?
I mean, it can be. Normally, that's not what we want to do. Really, we want to coach, mentor, and train the folks that are out there to deal with that situation. Our authority is to work with our employees who may have contracting oversight of that contractor doing the work. We want to coach, mentor, and train them to be able to deal with the contractor and help them through that situation. We're not out looking to shut jobs down. That's not our job at all. That's not our goal. We don't want to do that. But if there is an imminent danger, we will do that.
So give me some more examples about what safety PRT members do in the field, maybe with other mission sets.
They integrate themselves within the other teams that are out there. They become part of those teams. You know, it's twofold. really multifaceted, but twofold to be up front. The first mission, like Marjorie was saying, we're there to take care of our other core employees that we have out there on site, the QAs, the QARs, my commander that's out there, all those types of things. So we ensure that they have all of the information, all the PPE or whatever's required so they can do whatever function it is that they're doing safely. Now, on the other side, the contractual side, there's a lot of contractors that get hired to do the debris cleanup, the Blue Roof Team, and all those things. So we, as safety professionals, look and see and just keep an eye on all the operations that they're doing. And when we see things that are incorrect, then we associate that with the QARs or whoever else is involved. Let them know, hey, this is what's going on that's wrong. We give them guidance, like Marjorie was saying, and coaching and mentoring to help them get back on track. Normally, we don't have the authority to shut anything down unless it's imminent life and death. We can, but it has to be pretty bad stuff. Normally, we don't. We'll go through the QARs to just give them the guidance.
So our safety members, they are in the field. They're wearing the red shirts, not the white shirts for the most part.
I mean, it depends. We usually will have a safety manager and an industrial hygienist that will be at our RFO that will go out in the field and support our red shirt team, which is our safety specialists, and sometimes our CISM teams, they're connected to our offices too.
CISM is Crisis Incident Stress Management.
That's correct, yep.
Well, how do we keep this team trained up? Because the folks that are here this week for training, I know they're all safety and occupational health specialists in their regular jobs. So what additional training do we give these folks for emergency management?
Well, they complete the general FEMA training, the level one training that everybody does, the IS training, and really that's it. Because we capitalize on our career program 12 training to make them be stronger safety professionals. So we keep those types of skills ready to go. At the same time, every other year, we give them this training that they're here for this week.
Well, tell me a little bit more about those skills. What are the skills that are inherent to a good safety professional?
Well, for a safety professional, the Army has 26 program elements. I won't belabor you with all 26 elements, but they go anywhere from fall protection to electrical hazards and every gambit in between. So we are tasked with having some knowledge base on every one of those elements, and there's some standard that applies to each and every one of them. And over the years, we get more proficient in all of the things that we do, some more proficient in other areas because that's what they have in their districts. So that's what's great about having the safety specialists from around the different districts, around the different divisions, because we all come with a different skill set. But that's where the baseline is. There's a CP12 program, Career Program 12 program, that we all are seeking to achieve a CP12 certificate, which is just lets everybody know that we're all on the same playing field, that we've at least addressed those 26 areas. And that's where our baseline comes from. And then we take that information and apply it to a disaster.
So that actually lays out an accreditation from ANSI to baseline every safety specialist with the basic knowledge and understanding of what they need to do to be a safety professional.
Okay. Now, perhaps sometimes there's this stigma associated with a safety person that, and you know, your non-safety people, when they see a safety person come in, they say, oh, safety. Do you find that is so in emergency management, or do you not find that that is the case?
It depends. Safety is really personality driven, which is unfortunate. I've gone into disasters after safety professionals have left, where that's how people react. Oh, the safety person's here. It's really important for us as safety professionals to, like Dennis said, integrate into those teams. Building relationships is really how we get safety accomplished. We can't be the safety person out there all the time. Our team members and those people that we're out there to coach, mentor, and train have to be that eyes on the ground. So we have to train them and coach them to be that person. Now, if they don't like us, we're not very successful.
Okay. Well, what else have I missed? What's an important takeaway about safety that you want folks to know?
Well, it's kind of on the last question. I think it's important to know the folks in the field to know and our team members to understand that we are there to help. It's not just a cliche that, hey, we're here from the government, we're here to help. It's not that at all. But the fact that we definitely are, and you know, most of us are in this career field because we truly care about people. It's definitely not for the promotion capabilities or the money because we're limited quite a bit. But we do get to help people. And when we know that we've done something to change the course or the path that somebody's going down and allow them to go home that night to their families, that's a big deal for us. That's about the only accolades we get, which is great and that's fine. But that's what we're looking to achieve. And once we get everybody to understand that that's what we're here for, and we're not the safety Nazis, we're not out there trying to enforce a standard, we're trying to recognize a hazard and offer some kind of corrective abatement so that we don't have to live within that hazard so these guys can go home. So I think that's why it's important for us to be involved.
And I just add that, you know, right now the Corps of Engineers' focus is how do we take care of our workers? How do we make people feel valued and be a valued member of the Corps of Engineers? And I mean, that's what we do every day. Our job is to make people understand that they have a safe and healthful work environment, give them an avenue that if they don't, that they know that they can come to us and that we will work with our commands to give them that safe and healthful work environment so they feel appreciated when they come to work every day. So the Corps mission right now is to provide a workplace for people want to come to work. And that is our mission too, is the safety people's mission too.
Now, how do you handle the wide variety of environments to which you may be deployed? The volatility depends on the mission you're attached with, right?
It does. You know, it's like the Twin Towers going down, you know, versus Hurricane Sandy, you know, totally different missions. I wasn't on either one, so I can't attest to it, but I can see a totally different mission, you know, different mindset of the people that you're helping. You know, everybody had a loss, but when you have a loss of life as opposed to a loss of a building, you know, it's quite a different environment and you have to be personal. Like Marjorie was saying, it's all personality driven and go in there, be able to be empathetic or even sympathetic with the situation and apply your skills to the situation.
Well, thank you guys. Let's wrap it up here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we just want to say one more time how much we appreciate Dennis and Marjorie being here and talking to us about the safety PRT. And I think I've learned a little bit more about safety in the field, and I hope you guys have too. That's all we have for today's episode. Thanks for joining us, and we hope you've learned something. Please subscribe to our feed and check back for future episodes. I'm Nadia Taylor, and this is Semper Gumby.